Hello and welcome to 2BS Till Takeoff, the podcast inspired by conversations overheard at the airport bar. Join Phil as he grabs a couple of beers and chats with interesting people from around the world, sharing expert knowledge and hilarious stories that you won't find in your guidebook. So pull up a stool and get ready for an adventure as we explore worlds of travel and beyond with 2BS Till Takeoff.
4 hours in a Taliban headquarters.
Bad dog meat in Laos.
Was it golden retriever?
Smack a dirty old smooch on our beautiful fish right here.
He didn't die, but he fell down the side of the mountain.
Hello and welcome to 2 Beers Till Takeoff. My name is Phil, and today we have a world traveler and YouTuber on to tell some wild stories. This man has been to over 100 countries and has had the chance to visit ones like Iraq, Afghanistan, Somalia, and South Sudan. Welcome to the show, Chris Must List.
Yeah, it's an honor. I appreciate that. And if you say Iraq, in Iraq, you're going to get in quite a bit of trouble. I did the same, but thank you for the warm welcoming.
What's going on, man? Listen, I've been following along on YouTube, but I'm sure that there's some people that haven't, you know, had the chance to know your content. So maybe update people where you've just kind of come back from.
Yeah, for sure. Look, I'm obsessed with this thing called YouTube, and possibly more obsessed with traveling. I don't know if it's a midlife crisis. I just feel like my time is somewhat limited, and I'm on a mission to see every country in the world. So I am practically nonstop. So a couple days ago, I got home from a 10,000 mile drive, solo drive, basically a big circle around the United States of America. You know, there are so many stories. There are so many unique people to interact with and meet. And it's like a never ending journey. Prior to that, my last, I guess, big country was South Sudan in Kenya. But I mean, every 3 weeks, I'm somewhere. So over the course of the year, I try my best to do 20 new countries. So I'm always somewhere different. And I never really pre-plan. I normally give myself about a week notice. Maybe I dreamt about something, or something on Instagram inspired me. Basically that's me all over the world.
Nice. So there's a lot of spontaneity going into picking 100%. Destinations.
100%. You know, as the list gets lower, like how many countries I haven't seen, I have a pretty good grasp of which countries I sort of want to see sooner than later. But I mean, that always changes.
Nice. And so Chris, I must ask, Chris Must List, what's the story behind the name?
Yeah, it's like a new modern, my own version of a bucket list, just a list of things I want to do. I'm very physical, so my whole life, when I want to complete something, I write a list. So I have books and notepads everywhere of things like to accomplish. So it's my travel list, my must-see list before I leave planet Earth.
Sweet. Well, you know what? I want to play a bit of a game. Little play on words here, but I'm wondering if you, Chris, could list some things for me. So Chris, if you must list these three countries in terms of places you'd move, how would you rank them? Pakistan, Jamaica, Japan.
Jamaica. Jamaica number one, Japan number two, Pakistan number three. Although I would say Pakistan has the nicest people out of those three.
Too
distinctively different from the way I grew up. And Jamaica number one, because the people are incredible, the culture, and it's like a 2.5 hour short flight away from home, my home here in Toronto. Jamaica would be number one for sure.
Nice. So Chris, if you must list these in terms of places you would prioritize vacationing with your family, how would you rank them? Thailand, Honduras, Brazil.
My wife is Asian. She was born in the Philippines, but she came to Canada when she was 1 year old and never returned to the Philippines or Asia since. So my kids are half Asian. So I would go with Thailand would be number one. Nice. And then Brazil. I was in Honduras recently in the last 6 months. It's not nearly as dangerous, I guess, as it once was. You know, it was always ranked as like number one for murder rate. I met some great people there and I saw some beautiful scenery, but there's so many wonderful places in the world. I would go with my family prior to that. And Brazil is one of my ultimate favorite countries in the world. So that would easily come in.
Brazil's awesome. Just on the subject, where did you get a chance to go?
Yeah, I can see you have some dots on the back there, right behind your ear. I still want to go to the Amazon in Brazil. That's my next trip. But I've been to Rio twice, and both times I spent about 3 weeks there. So that quite a bit of time. That's my favorite part of Brazil that I've seen thus far. But there's Bahia. Oh, have you been to Bahia?
I have, yeah.
Yeah, so I heard that. I heard a lot of good, good like culture and dancing and music there. So I can't wait to go there and do that Amazon trip.
Hey, you, come here. I got a secret for you. This episode is sponsored by No Days Wasted, a leader in the hangover supplement. This episode is sponsored by No Days Wasted, a leader in the This episode is sponsored by No Days Wasted, a leader in the hangover supplement industry. Listeners can now get 15% off their next purchase by using promo code 2beers in all caps at checkout. Yeah.
Yeah, Bahia is great for like that Afro kind of culture up there. It's very colorful architecture. You don't really expect that. You see that there. It's very colonial, but it's a really beautiful place. There's one place though in Brazil that I must say is very near and dear to my heart, is a place called Belo Horizonte. Reason being, has the most bars per capita in the world.
Okay,
so there's nothing there.
There's nothing there but bars.
There's nothing there but bars.
Okay. now I know what motivates you with traveling. I try to stay as far away from bars as I can. Nowadays that I'm holding a camera, I don't want to embarrass myself too much on camera. But that's a pretty good question. That's neat. You got my mind, the gears in my brain ticking, thinking what I would do.
So Chris, I've got two more for you.
Sure.
So if you must list these countries in terms of places you witness the most amazing wildlife, how would you rank them? Nepal, Somalia, Kenya?
Oh, well, Kenya, I've seen the most wildlife, but it's like a gated, it's almost like a big open air zoo, which I don't dislike. So Kenya for sure, Masai Mara. Overall, like from an adventure standpoint, Nepal, although I didn't see that much wildlife, I know it's there, and it felt like the animals were free, like they weren't within a park, they were just everywhere. In Somalia, I didn't see any animals. Like Somaliland, I got to go to a cheetah rescue where they had like a few hundred cheetahs that were rescued from people's homes, which was very unique and incredible. But those are the only animals that I saw when I was in Somalia/Somaliland.
Okay, nice. So Chris, last one. If you must list these three brands, starting with your favorite, how would you rank Dolce & Gabbana, Gucci, Not Your Average Tourist merch?
Yeah, I'd have to go with Not Your Average. No, really and truly, YouTube is relatively new to me. I've been doing YouTube Travel Channel for 3 years. My first video was uploaded 3 years ago. Maybe a year and a half ago, I started taking this seriously. My whole life, I'm 45 years old. My whole life, I've been into sunglasses and shoes. It's always been my brand. I'm a branding guy. Big glasses, flamboyant glasses have always been my thing. And most of those glasses are Gucci. Look, I'm wearing a hoodie from Walmart and a tank top from Walmart. So it's not that I'm into material things too much. But I mean, I probably have 100 pair of Gucci glasses easily. I don't like to bring the good ones out on vacation because I know they're going to get messed up. So I sort of keep the rotation fairly small. But as I continue to like the merch, for me is something that's, I haven't even really touched base with it yet. It's really just starting now as I start to grow. So that has to become my favorite, or there's something wrong with me in the very near future. But I've never worn Dolce & Gabbana. I don't think I've worn that in my life. So that would come in last.
Hey, no, listen, you got to rep the brand, right? But so you just mentioned that you've been doing it for 3 years. So did you start traveling 3 years ago, or did you only just start vlogging 3 years ago?
I've been traveling my whole life. The thought of holding a camera up in front of my face was actually daunting. I know people say this. I'm a shy person by nature. If we were in a room and like it's happened before, and I'm in a business, a room where you're supposed to like network with other people and shake hands and, hey, what do you do? And all that kind of stuff. I'm horrible at that. There's a name for it. Just like mingling, I guess.
Introvert?
I'm introvert. Yeah. But I mean, I'm not motivated to mingle. Okay. Like even young growing up, I would never go up to a girl and say, like, you want to dance or anything like that. It's just not me. I'm very shy. Cool. So the thought of me holding a camera up and walking around like this, talking, it wasn't a pleasant thought. And it took me a lot of practice to actually be able to hold the camera up. I'm uncomfortably, how do I put it, shy when it comes to holding a camera to my face. But I lucked out a little bit. My like third or fourth video in Brazil on Copacabana Beach, just walking on the beach, hit 1 million views in like 1 week. And it opened my eyes up to the opportunity. I wasn't even monetized at the time, and it wasn't the kind of content I like. So when I hit 1 million, I actually took took the video down because I didn't want, I was getting comments like all pertaining to the girls and the what they're wearing and the men.
Yeah.
It was a very sexualized thing. And I'm like, this is not why I'm doing this. But I guess to get into it deeper, I've been traveling my whole life. Like since I was 16, I was saving money to drive to Florida, you know, either by myself or with friends. So I visited over 100 countries easy before I started a YouTube channel. It was like the encouragement of my family saying like, Chris, you're doing all this crazy stuff. Like, why don't you just record it? And it was never about money for YouTube. It was like, let me archive some of the crazy stuff I'm seeing.
Yes. So maybe what was the motivation to kind of start though? You know what I mean? You started at 16. Yeah. What was the first, was it an inspiration from like a family member or like, did you just always want to do it?
No, I don't know what it is. I was just born with it. I was never good at like reading or learning. I'm horrible in school. Had no interest in school. But you know, like reading one of those yellow National Geographic magazines from the thrift stop or the thrift shop or antique store, like that is something I always got excited by. And because I'm not a great reader, like I don't retain. If I read a novel, I might retain 10% of what has happened, and I forgot about the rest. So when I see like a tribe in National Geographic, I want to get out there and meet them. I want to shake hands. I want to taste the food they're cooking. That's how I learn best. So I've always been addicted to that. So any little, even when I had no money, any money I had, I would do like the, you know, like the dieting, eating, you know, chicken noodle soup for a month or two in order to be able to go to Mexico or go to Dominican Republic or go to Jamaica, even at 18 years old, right? So this has been an addiction my whole life. And once you've gone to Jamaica a bunch of times and Dominican Republic and Mexico and Florida, you know, most human beings like myself think of like, what more can I do? What's something more adventurous? And don't get me wrong, it is exciting when I'm at a party and somebody says, you know, Chris has been to Afghanistan. And everybody, like, all the attention circles around me. I'm like, yeah, I've been to Afghanistan. So like, it's addicting.
Thanks for your service.
Yeah, no, not my service. Yeah, it's addicting to, like, to be the only one in the room that has done something. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I'm addicted, man. I can't stop. I don't stop thinking about it. It is always and forever.
Well, yeah, shit, based on the amount of content you put out, I can 100% attest to that you're constantly thinking about it. But for you, let's try to go a bit deeper here. When you're going to see, you know what I mean? You see that National Geographic magazine, you see that tribe, you say like, oh my God, I want to go meet them. For you, what is the thing that you want to go meet? Is it that you want to discover their culture? Is it you want to get that culture shock? Like what are you looking for into traveling?
Yeah, education, which normally means culture. Nowadays, there's no culture shock. Like it's very difficult to shock me. I've seen everything so many times, but it's not just culture. Like I went to a war in Ukraine when it happened. Mm-hmm. I went to the front lines and it's not because I like war, because it's the opposite. I don't like guns. I don't dislike guns, but I don't like guns. I don't have a gun. So like I'm a collector of things. My whole life I've been a collector of things, physical things. This is like a collection of places I've been. I don't know what it is. It's just like I've been to war. I've been to this. I've been to that. It's a collection of memories that motivates me, because not everything is cultural. Some are just historic moments in time that I want to be a participant in, or at least I want to be a witness to. So that keeps me moving. And you know, and it never ends, because tomorrow something could happen. I saw today a bridge collapse in the U.S.
That's
like if I
crazy.
Wasn't doing what I was doing, I would have jumped down there, because it's like it might be a small I'm sorry, I don't even know if people lost their life. I'm presuming they did. Forgive me.
Yeah, probably.
But it's something I would normally go to document, just as being like taking a piece of history. So my motivation is collecting memories, really.
Yeah, it's pretty wild what happened there, man. Like I didn't really see too much about it, but I've heard, just looking at, you know, news articles, kind of went through some of the comments. Some people claim that there was a cyber attack. I was like, yikes.
Yeah, that's the internet, you got to be careful, because they a lot of stuff.
But yeah, I mean, listen, it's really terrible what happened. Obviously, there's, I think, people that did lose their lives, but it's, that boat definitely did hit the best part, if you want to put that bridge down, right? Which is kind of weird.
Right.
For a boat that lost power. But anyways, Chris, you know, in your videos, you do go to areas typically not frequented by tourists. You have videos like we were just talking about, you know, videos with tribes in Africa and war zones and in the hood. And what really motivates you to go to those specific dangerous areas of the world?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't, like, from a business standpoint, from a YouTube standpoint, you know, when I decided to start carrying this little camera around and facing it towards me, I decided that I want to be the best I can at it. Okay, I'm not going to do this to half-ass it. Like anything in my life, when I want something, I become hyper-obsessed. So I took it as a business. So I sat down on a table, literally with a pen and paper, and I wrote down, like, what can I bring to the table that others will not? Like, what special traits do I have or gifts? And one of the things I wrote down is that I don't have fear. Okay, let me correct myself. I definitely have fear for certain things, but people in neighborhoods and gangs and slums, I don't have fear for. People don't scare me. So that was one of the things that made me different. Another thing that I wrote down is, look, I'm not coming in trying to make a career immediately. I have money. I want to do this for fun, but I also have the money that I can invest to go to these places where somebody starting out won't have the money to go apply for $1,000 visa in South Sudan, for example. And thirdly, I have the support of my family. My wife is like incredibly supportive, as I am to her career. And those three things I think are what makes me different. Throw in some crazy sunglasses or nerd glasses now and then. And that's sort of my brand. And that's the reason I go to places that others don't. But what I'm seeing is that's changing a lot of people. Like, for example, when I was in Kenya and I filmed the worst slums, Kibera slums, I can't tell you how many Kenyans told me, wow, you went, now I'm going. And I see like tons of videos there. So maybe I'm opening the door to other people. But in reality, I like the danger factor of visiting certain places that other people might not.
Right. And, you know, I think we will get into some of the locations bit more, some of the more specific locations when you're doing your story. But there's a group of people that you met once that were very, I guess, considered dangerous, the Agori people in India. So you spent some time with them, and they're famously this spiritual group who do not kill people, but they are cannibals. So can you tell me about that experience?
Man, what an incredible experience. I knew nothing about the Agori before I went to India. Like, I've seen stories on them, but I didn't do any research. I knew nothing.
They're wild.
I know. So the first moment I got to meet a gentleman, and I'm like, can you introduce me to the Agori? And I had a conversation through the translator. I'm like, wow, I became addicted immediately. Like, I want to find out more and more and more. And that's the kind of people that you need to return a couple times in order to really, really, really get the good gist of what they're all about. But I mean, on my final night in Varanasi, India, I was sitting with the Agori, and I drank the alcohol out of the human skull. I didn't highlight it too much in the video. It is in my video because I was worried it was going to get blocked, or I would have it on my thumbnail and put title. But it happened. I don't even think most people realize it happened, because I sort of tried to keep it away. But so I'm so intrigued. Varanasi in India and the culture, and then you add the Agori. Man, even talking about it right now, my hands are getting all sweaty and excitement, because there's so much to learn with them. And yeah, I heard the same thing, that some of them are cannibals. I didn't witness any of that, so I can only speak about what I personally saw. So very spiritual.
Yeah, man. I remember the first time I came across them was on, I don't know if you remember the TV show Wild Boys, Steve-O, Chris Pontius. And I remember they went to go to meet the Agori in India. And dude, I think he had a cut or something on his foot, and the guy started sucking his toe, like sucking the blood. I was like, what is happening, dude? Like, who are these people?
I have a quick Agori story. So I'm in this little room with him, and there's a younger man from Los Angeles in the room as well, that's there to learn how to, oh my goodness, what is it? Like, when you're sitting in your, learning how to get into a deeper meditative state. They live with like next to nothing. Money is not mandatory, so they don't ask me for money. So I bring gifts. So I brought a bag of rice, amongst other things. Like, they only survive off the staples in life. They don't overdo it, right? So I'm sitting there for hours, and we're talking within this little indoor-outdoor room. There's no windows or anything. And I see a mouse is gnawing into the rice that I got, like the top corner. So I'm like, hey, the mouse there, and they're laughing. They just start laughing. I said, okay. So then I see the mouse go in, and he's coming out, little tiny mouse sticking his head out, right? And I'm like, guys, I don't know if it's going to like contaminate your rice. I don't know how it works. I'm like, just the mouse. And he laughed. He said, Chris, leave the mouse. There's enough food for the three of us. It's like him, the guy. So even though in his life, in his world, he had one rice, maybe like one little loaf of bread, and one thing for him, and no ownership, no bank account, no money in the bank, no storage of food. Even though he was on very small rations of food, he was willing to share with a mouse. And I thought, I don't know if it was just me, like, I don't know if it's a metaphorical thing or something. I thought it was an incredible learning experience. I'm like, man, you know, most people, when they have little, they want to keep it. Maybe it's not when they have little. It's like when they have a lot, they want to keep it. And I don't even just mean money. I just mean things in general. Oh, no, that's mine. I want more. When this man was willing to share his only rice with a little rodent. It's a memory I'll remember. One day I told myself I was going to get a tattoo on my body of the little mouse as sort of like a memory of that day.
That's a pretty cool story, man. I'm looking forward one day to definitely go check them out and hopefully not get eaten.
No, you're good. You're safe. I don't know if you can wear those glasses there. If you wear those glasses, there could be trouble.
Dude, what do you mean? You sent me these to wear them for the episode. Yeah. What are you talking about?
I can't claim any part of that.
I want to talk about another part of the world that you've been. I want to talk about if you can compare and contrast your experiences in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yeah. So Iraq, incredible people. Afghanistan, incredible people. Both have very good food. If I were to compare the two, both incredible. I don't know. And also both countries that were like destroyed to a certain extent by the U.S. Army. Some people will say for reasons. Others will say not. I would say that no, we didn't need. I say we. I'm Canadian. We as humans didn't need to go into Afghanistan or Iraq. A lot of people would say since Saddam Hussein is gone, that the country has really fallen into poverty, into troubles. I'm the kind of guy that I think you stick your head only when you're invited. Going back, both countries, incredible. They by far passed my expectations. Both countries I want to return to. The one problem with Afghanistan is it's like a new country. It's very similar to South Sudan, where South Sudan is a new country. I mean, the leadership of Afghanistan is so new. It's so unorganized. The Taliban are not, they're not taught in school how to use a computer. Everything is very old school, and we live in a new world. So, I mean, the trouble of a tourist like myself going there and waiting 4 days to apply for a permission or a permit to video, getting that granted, but yet every single day I'm there, I'm arrested. And I don't mean arrested like with handcuffs, but I'm definitely detained and brought into police stations to verify my documents, because everything is like on paper. So if that happens at 7 at night, you will spend the night at the police station until the next morning, until they can get a hold of someone. So that aspect of the travel is not fun. It is out of any country I've been to, it's the most stressful. Not because of danger, but because of just being seen by Taliban and, you know, consistently just every day being held for maybe 4 or 5, 6 hours in detainment. You never know. One day they could say that, hey, we're going to keep you for the next 10 years. So it's very weighing on your mind. Whereas Iraq, you can travel freely. But again, both countries, incredible. I don't think people realize how nice people of like Afghanis are or Iraqis are, but they're very like nice natured. They'll invite you in as a stranger to their house, which happened to me there, and they want to cook for you and everything. There's just incredible. I can't speak highly enough about them.
Nice. Any stories from those areas?
Well, Afghanistan, you know, Taliban. So even from the moment I crossed from Pakistan manually in a car, I drove to Kabul. In Afghanistan, Taliban is the ruling government. They stop us everywhere, like me, the taxi driver, everywhere. They see me and they can tell I'm a tourist right away. So at first they wanted pictures, and I thought it was the coolest thing in the world, because I'm thinking I'm going to send these home to my friends and be like, look, I got pictures with Taliban. But then I also came to the understanding of people sending me messages on Instagram saying like, you know, Taliban killed my family 8 years ago. And I'm like, wow, right? I got to be open-minded and look at both sides of this. It's pretty cool to take a picture with Taliban, but stay open-minded that I'm not a supporter of anybody being killed. So it was the first time out of any of my travels where I had to really think about what I posted, knowing that it's very similar to North Korea, that if I posted something negative against Taliban, I would never be allowed back into the country. And there was definitely negative stuff I could post. But I like Afghanistan so much and I want to go deeper that I have to hold those stories inside my brain until the last time I visit. And it's the same in Syria with their government. You cannot say negative things. It's not free speech. So it was an eye-opener in Afghanistan. Definitely different. And everybody that I know that's been there has said the same thing. It's a very stressful trip.
Yeah, I think the reason I guess I asked is because we had our mutual friend, Nolan, your boy Seal, he came on to tell a story of his experience in Iraq.
Okay, I didn't even know he went to Iraq.
Yeah, dude. He, anyways, I'll send you the video. It's okay. quite a story. But man, let's get to Q&A. So first question, hot or cold?
Weather, hot.
Beach or mountains?
Ooh, mountains.
Bus or train?
Train.
Good answer. Cats or dogs?
Funny, I have a cat, but I would probably prefer a dog. Well, I hope the cat's not listening.
Top or bottom bunk?
Ooh, shoot. I guess that's tough. In jail, you want the bottom bunk. But if you're on a hot train and the window only opens on the top, those India trains, that's tough. That's the toughest question you've asked today. It depends where that bunk is.
What about middle bunk, right?
Yeah, man. In India, trains. The top bunk was the only one that had the window that opened on the long train, which is like a 20-hour train. So I would definitely pick that one. That's probably the best question I've ever been asked in my life. I don't even know how you came up with that.
Backpacker talk, man.
I'll go with the top bunk.
It's such a basic question, but there's so much into it because I've asked some people, for example, there's a recurring guest that always comes on is one of my buddies, Sid, and he prefers the bottom bunk. But if you'd said that you prefer the top bunk, is because you like to, it's like the equivalent of being on a waterbed. You know what I mean? If somebody's hooking up with somebody else on the bottom bunk, it makes the top bunk kind of go like a waterbed.
Yeah, I didn't put any of that kind of thought into it like that. I don't think it's doing that on a bunk bed. But yeah, if I'm sleeping, I don't want them stepping down on my bunk and putting their feet near my face. I'm going at the top for the most
part. Hey, good call. Favorite sports team?
Well, I'm not into sports. I'm really not into sports.
You got a Cardinals hat on.
Yeah, it's all about colors. Like, I just match my colors with whatever I'm wearing. I don't know. I guess I'd have to go with the Toronto Raptors. It's really the only sport I watch. This is all like all encompassingly busy. Like, there's no time to watch sports. I like boxing. I like boxing. I would watch.
If you had a superpower, what would it be?
Man,
I'm telling you, man, these questions, these Q&As, they sound easy, but they test you to your core. I'm just warning you.
Yeah, that's a question I should have an answer to. Wouldn't be flying, because I'm scared of heights, so I don't want to fly too far. I wouldn't want to know the future. Man,
maybe you got enough powers as it is.
Maybe I like just being a normal human being. But I joke, even over dinner, I told my daughter she has superhuman powers. She always, Dad, you always say that. I don't know. I'm gonna have to pass. I don't know. I need more thought.
It's all good. Everybody gets one pass. If you could have a beverage with one person from history, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
Oh, Michael Jackson for sure. Michael Jackson to me is like probably the first person I idolized. Like, not idolized because I'm not a singer or a dancer, but the first person I looked up to like on a worldwide level and like wanted to be like, I mean, as a child, and his music, not too often does music break color barriers to the extent that he did. You find old people love Michael Jackson, young people, you know, his album Thriller, it's like the age group was like from 7 years old to 70 was the average consumer of the best-selling record of all time. So I would go with Michael Jackson.
That doesn't really exist anymore, that demographic for an album.
That's why he's got the best-selling album of all time, because he broke it down. You know, you see me some gangsters listening to Michael Jackson, but you also see some people with cowboy hats listening to Michael Jackson, right? So how often does that happen? And to put an album like Thriller together, it's like the perfect mix of everything.
I think the only other album I can think that, you know, caters to 7 to 70 is like the Space Jam soundtrack.
Yeah, but not to. But I think Michael Jackson's the one off.
I'm just kidding.
He's the one guy. Man, I like the Space Jam soundtrack. I can think of some.
I put it on the other day. It still holds up, dude. Not as much as Thriller. I'll give you that. But it's
If you look, well, Julio's passed away. I know he's on the main song. I'm trying to think who else. Oh yeah, there's a bunch of man.
Barry White, like, dude. There's so many. R. Kelly. He's on a couple there. Anyways, it's packed. Anyways, check it out. What's something you never travel without?
Now a camera and a ridiculous amount of batteries. Other than that, like if I'm just traveling, I'm a pretty simple traveler. I no doubt I have a long list of things that I bring that people probably don't bring. Like I always have a fork, spoon, this plastic.
Like a sport?
Always. Nice. Because when I'm ordering something or I'm bringing something to my room and I don't have it, I always bring like a sewing kit. I have black electrical tape. I'm trying to think. I bring like this medicine container full of, like the remedies type thing. I call them, I don't know if I can, I don't want to curse. I call them like when you have to go to the washroom pills. I call them shitting pills. So it says shitting pills.
Yeah, dude, curse.
Okay. Those kind of things. Baby wipes, no doubt. Other than that, I wear like black t-shirts. You know, in hot countries, I really sweat. And with photo, like with video, I like to be able to edit scenes together. People don't get this. So I like to basically look the same every day. I bring my t-shirts, right? Because
makes sense.
I like to be able to chop. Hey, if this video is not full enough, let me take something from a previous day and people wouldn't know the difference. But there are some people that hit me up like, Chris, you wear the same thing every day. Yeah, thanks. It's on purpose.
So you're on that Mark Zuckerberg, right? You take one decision out of the day, you just fucking...
Yeah, take away. Yeah, exactly. I've read that story about Mark Zuckerberg and very similar idea, yes.
I just have to ask, not part of my questions, but you made a mention about top bunk on the, if you're in jail, and the spork. Have you been in jail?
Yeah, of course. Bunch of times.
You've been in jail?
In different countries. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Oh, shit.
Cuba, I went to jail for 2 weeks. For flying a drone. Yeah. And then as a youngster, like I'm an old man now, but in Toronto, growing up, I was definitely a troublemaker. I didn't do any long stays in jail, but I've definitely been a few times. Toronto, small stuff like not breaking and entering, but being in an abandoned establishment, like private property. And I got caught doing that a few times in abandoned buildings. I've always had this obsession with, like, I don't even know how that's a criminal charge. Like it's an abandoned building. I'm in it. I'm not causing any harm. Like, but in Toronto, they looked at it differently. And even till today, I still go in abandoned buildings all the time. I just don't get caught, I guess. And I'm ridiculous because I film it and I upload it. But I have been held in police custody for going into abandoned buildings. But my biggest stay was 2 weeks in Cuba.
How was the 2 weeks in Cuban jail?
Yeah, horrible. And if you would have told me I was going to be there 2 weeks, I would do it easily. But it was the not knowing how long I would be there that was the scary part.
Can you describe your experience?
Yeah, well, I was in protective custody. I'm the one guy that I'm not allowed outside.
Okay.
That sounds bad because if you're in protective custody in North America, PC, it's like you're a child molester. You wear a different color jumpsuit and you're hated. It's not the same in Cuba. Cuba, the first 2 years after you've been arrested, so there's no judge or lawyer or phone call. So the first, they have up to 2 years to do an investigation on you. And during those 2 years, you're locked away from the rest of the people that are in jail. You don't get any outdoor privileges at all. So I'm in that side of the jail where I'm not allowed to go outside, which was very difficult because I can hear the other guys going outside. You know, they go to the lunchroom, to the cafeteria. I can't do any of that. I was stuck. But my final few days in jail, they started letting me get out in like the general population.
Nice. And can you speak Spanish? Like, were you able to kind of converse? Or
good enough. And the people that were there, I'm in the tourist jail. So I'm in the non-Cuban jail. So everybody that was there was non-Cuban. So everybody there spoke a bunch of different languages.
And I just question off the top of my head, not one of my set questions again, but how many push-ups you do in jail for 2 weeks?
Yeah, no, I was playing basketball. I was definitely bored.
Okay.
I had my socks. Yeah. There was no, like, you only have running water if it rains. you know, like bugs everywhere, frogs, like there's no windows, right? So I remember stepping down off my bunk one day and stepping into something. There's no lights, only the moon, like a movie, right? And my feet were hurting and I went to the moonlight and it was those ants, the biting ants, and they were all over my leg. Really, I would just walk back and forth. The room was like a four-person room, but it was just me by myself. So like for fun, I would just like move my bed from the bunk bed to the top, then to the other side. Every day, you know, I'd sleep a lot, right? What else is there really to do? It's funny, I was doing push-ups just like the movie. I was skinnier then than I am now. But that was about 8 years ago now.
2 weeks, man. You must have been jacked coming out of there.
Man, I couldn't wait to get out. It was the first time in my life I went 2 weeks without shaving. So I had more facial hair. I've never had facial hair in my life. So my kids got to see me in a different way. You don't get too jacked in 2 weeks. I was deprived of food. I got a lot skinnier for sure.
Oh yeah, man. Well, thanks for sharing that. That was interesting.
I can laugh about it now.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure at the time it wasn't a laughing matter.
No, not at all.
What is your favorite world attraction?
Man, I'm not really an attraction person. Like I like the cultures. I like the people. So, I mean, I don't know if.
Could be nature as well, right?
Yeah, man. Like my favorite country in the world is Namibia. And the reason that I've fallen in love with Namibia is first and foremost, I wasn't expecting it to be so incredible. I really went there and it was like a daunting, when I got out of the airplane, I looked outside, it's all desert. And I'm like, man, I planned to be here 10 days. Like my mind is like, what am I going to do here? But like, what was the attraction? It was the real wildlife. No national park, like wildlife just on the street. In the Himba tribe, for example, was, man, just so magical. And I did it all without like a tour guide or with any, I just went. So I don't know if that would be considered an attraction, but the tribe, I guess, there are tribes in Africa, no disrespect to them, everyone has to eat, that are 100% money driven, money. Take a picture with the elder, okay, $5. It's almost like going to the carnival and paying, you know, pay to play, which I understand nowadays people have to survive. But I mean, the Himba tribe, out of every tribe that I've met, was so against money. Never did they ask me for anything. They treated me as if I were one of them. Compared to South Sudan, hey, you want to see our cows? Okay, we need $20. You want to, and nothing against that. I understand people.
It's
have
just, yeah, it sours the experience, obviously.
Dampers the authenticity of it for sure.
Which country has the best cuisine?
Ooh, think. And I get asked this all the time, and I'd probably, like, overall, I would say Italy. Italy is the food. I like seafood, and they got seafood, and I love pasta. But then there are some places that were like a real surprise, like Scotland to me was like, wow, Scotland? I never expected food to be so good. Nepal, incredible. So many different things in Nepal that I've never tried before. So I mean, it was like a real, every time I could go out to dinner, I'm like, what can I try new? What's new and exciting? I guess those two would be up there. But if you ask me on a different day, then maybe a different place might come to mind.
Yeah, solid answers, man. But what's the weirdest food you've eaten?
Oh man, I have a list. So in South Sudan, I ate rat. We caught rat outside and we barbecued them and ate them. I've eaten guinea pig in Peru.
Yeah, I've done that too.
Camel. In the Middle East and Africa, camel is everywhere. Camel is very good. So to the average person, if you say camel, they're not going to understand. These big worms in Namibia, they're like grubs that you barbecue up a little bit and you eat. I guess those are a few. I'm not into insects. So I like, when I'm in Asia, I don't eat like bugs or anything. Oh, I ate a cobra when I was in Vietnam a couple months ago.
Nice. What is your biggest travel pet peeve?
I guess people, like big tourist traps. And it's not a pet peeve because I like it that other people do it. I don't want to do it. So my biggest pet peeve about travel is people that travel to a country, let's use Dominican Republic or Mexico or Jamaica, just as an example, and never leave the resort and say to their friends that I went to Jamaica. No, you went to a resort. You never left the resort. You didn't get to experience the culture. And that coincides with people that when they travel, they Google everything and let Google dictate what they're going to do. So like, for example, if I'm going to a resort in Mexico and I'm thinking about leaving the resort, I'm Google like, is it safe for me to leave my resort in Mexico? The first answer says, no, it is not. It is extremely dangerous. So you listen to Google and you stay inside the resort. And I'm not mad at those people. I just don't understand those people. If you go to a country, like
statistically, it's also dangerous to stay on a resort in Mexico as well.
Yeah, but everywhere. Right. You drink the water, you choke on the chicken bone. Like, there's always going to be a reason. But what I would say is, like, my biggest pet peeve are those people. And I know a lot of those people, and I still like those people. But that aspect of travel, I don't understand. Like, get out, go to the local market, go talk to people, you know, ask them questions, try their food, step a little bit outside of your comfort zone to enjoy somebody else's culture.
Yeah, it's a lot better to get diarrhea from an awesome meal that you had at the market than it is to get from the buffet line, right?
Yeah, for sure. I haven't been to an all-inclusive hotel in years, like decades. I so much rather go down a little alley and find some little mom and pop restaurant and eat some food there.
Yeah, that's a good answer. What is the most underrated country?
Namibia. Let me go back to it. My favorite country is something I never hear anybody talk about. It's funny because Drew Binsky, I heard him recently say his favorite country was Namibia. And I'm like, okay, I'm not the only one that sees it. Namibia. Because who do you know that says I want to go to Namibia?
I actually know a bit about Namibia, like its big beer culture, because it used to be a German colony, right?
Yes. And there's still German towns there with German names.
Yeah, I used to live in Germany, and the big thing that I wanted to do is to go do Oktoberfest in Namibia.
Amazing, yeah.
It'd be cool.
You should. Namibia, man, even thinking about it and talking about it, it's got me excited. It's been about 2 years since I've been there. I'm going to wait another year and go back.
Oh, yeah. Chris, you travel a lot. Can you tell me your best travel hack? Something that helped the people that are the listeners. Yeah,
there's so many, really. There is so many. The basics. Let me, instead of giving you one, the basics. I use hotels.com. So all my stays other than Airbnb are in one location. So that gives me, because I'm enterprise level, because I stay in more than 30 hotels a year, it gives me the ability to be like their number one, whatever you want to call alcoholic. And how does that help me? It allows me to check into a hotel any time of day. So if my airplane lands at 6 a.m, I don't have to wait till 3 p.m. to check in, or I don't have to pay an additional fee of a day, which really helps me. And every 10th stay is free. So what I normally do go ahead.
No, I said, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, and I accumulate my free stays. And then, you know, normally my last trip of every year, the hotels are all free. You know, very simple. I use skyscanner.com to book my airplane. And I'm not like a budget traveler, but hey, if I can go on Thursday instead of Tuesday and save $500, I'm going to do that. So
SkyScanner
gives you the ability to look months in advance as to what the price point will be. So I think that's hugely important. Another hack is like certain countries, you got to find out if they require you like a takeaway ticket. So for example, like Belize, when you fly to Belize, they have to see that you're leaving. So you have to show them a ticket. That's when you need to have some very basic Photoshop skills because I only buy one-way tickets. So here's a trick on any computer. If you highlight the date, so say your receipt is emailed to you, right? You can just highlight it, right click and go to inspect and change the wording or change the dates. So I cannot tell you how many times I've created fake go away tickets because the country will not allow me in without the ticket. And when I go to a country, I don't know how long I'm going to stay. I never, ever, ever have a go away ticket because if I want to leave in 2 days, I want to leave. If I want to leave in 2 months, I want to leave. So that little trick about highlighting the words and then inspecting and changing the dates. And then I just take a photo with my phone of the receipt and it works very, very well. Those are three very simple travel hacks for me that I use each and every time that I travel.
That last one, it's either like one of the best travel hacks I've heard or possibly one of the worst. It might be remember when I spent two weeks in a jail in Belize, right?
No, what are they going to do? How are they going to tell? It's No, that's
yeah, just make sure their systems aren't digital. You'll be fine.
Yeah. No, nobody really looks, believe me.
Chris, where's somewhere you'd never go back? This is the tough part.
Yeah, I went to Kuwait and it was really, really boring. Like everything is very, very quiet and religious and small. There's nothing happening. I went to the beach on a weekend, the biggest beach, and I was the only person there. Even restaurants weren't open in the middle of summer. Oh. So their celebrations are different than my celebrations. And I was so bored. I could say I'm not going to, there's no reason for me to ever go back to Kuwait.
It reminded you of your 2 weeks in Cuban jail?
Yeah, probably even worse. Sorry to my Kuwaitis. I was excited to get there and I'm like, wow, there's nothing happening. I guess if I was with the right person, they would have shown me something better than what I saw.
Exactly. But experience sometimes is subjective, right? So you just have that great of an experience. You state your reasons why. And
yeah, I have no hate. Like nothing negative happened. It was just really boring.
Fair enough. Where did you experience the least friendly locals?
Somalia, Mogadishu, for sure. The hatred they had for me for being white. And this is the part I don't understand. Look, I'm going to speak very openly. I'm a transparent human being. When I walk through Africa, and I've been to about 25 countries in Africa, I am treated as an equal. There are times where people, the residents of Africa, treat me better than equal, which I don't expect and I don't want. I want to be treated as a human, but I'm always treated well. So I went to Mogadishu and I was yelled at. Rocks were being thrown at me and worse, like spat at, F you, this and that. And, you know, people commented, like I uploaded the video, the first video, and people commented, well, Chris, you should expect it because your people, have caused so much harm to Mogadishu. And I'm like, this is like the most ridiculous. This is a recurring theme I get as a white YouTuber that my people have done this. Even with my Haiti series, they're like, your people, your ancestors caused this harm. This kind of talk can only be towards a white person. I could never go on any other race's channel and say something like that. See, the harm that's happening in Somalia, the crime that's happening in Somalia is black on black crime. Black-on-black killing. Mogadishu has one of the highest murder rates in the world, and not one white human being is anywhere near there. But yet, my people, my ancestors are still to blame. I never felt any hatred in any country anywhere in the world except for Mogadishu. And when I explained how I was feeling, the general public said, it's okay. Your people caused this damage, which I don't understand and I don't agree with, period. It's like saying every Austrian is to blame for Hitler or every Russian is to blame for, like, it doesn't even make any sense.
No, I agree.
I don't like it. I don't agree it. And I've never used that kind of nonsense on anyone else. You know, like in Rwanda, there's a genocide. It was black tribe killing black tribe. Imagine a black man walks past me on the street and I blame him for Rwanda. It's just pure stupidity. It doesn't even make any sense. So that was the only country, a very long-winded answer as to I was hated the moment I arrived.
Yeah, Malcolm, that's unfortunate. Where were you the most scared?
I think Ukraine, the war in Ukraine. You know, if I'm in close, like if I'm in an argument with somebody on the street in LA and Compton, and they don't have a gun to my head, I'm ready to fight. I actually enjoy fighting. I have a history of fighting. It's something I can do. If they pull a gun out and they say, Chris, or hey, give me your shoes, I give them my shoes. Most likely I'm going to live. But when you're in war and rockets are coming down day and night, there's no opportunity to talk out of it. There's no, I just felt for the first time in my life, like, hey, if it's my time, it's my time. Because, you know, there were people dead. I never showed anything on my videos. My videos did extremely poor. But I mean, there are people dead that died 100 meters from me, and I lived. This is me and my bulletproof vest, no helmet, with a guy I met. But like, these are just people walking through the streets with, I don't want to zoom in, but shrapnel that I got to witness. And like, and now you have to ask yourself, why them and not me? I was 100 meters away. So the first couple days, the sound of sirens when the rocket or missile is coming close definitely had my heart racing to a level it's never raced before. But it might sound crazy to say that I liked it. I don't like death. I want to be very clear. I like that adrenaline rush when normal people have fear. That adrenaline rush that they get, it makes me feel like I'm alive. I don't want to sound like a psychopath. I want to be very clear. Like those people that died, I cry for them. I'm very emotional. But I do feed off the adrenaline rush of, you know, a scary environment.
Maybe, you know, we touched on some darker themed things throughout this question period. Let's end with a little bit of a happier question. What's the funniest YouTube comment you've gotten recently?
Oh, man, they're all funny. Every one of them is funny. Man, you got to have thick skin to be on YouTube. And I thought it was just me. But I see everybody gets the same kind of nonsense. The funniest, quite often I get a question to be either CIA or FBI, undercover. Or he's definitely undercover. Somebody pointed out yesterday, I have a tattoo of an owl and an all-seeing eye. So I get tattoos from around the world. So this is my Egypt tattoo. I got this in Mexico City. Now, I had no thought or didn't put any idea into this being something to do with a part of the Illuminati. He's definitely a part of Illuminati. I can tell by his tattoos, the way it's this and that, and it's directional to this and that. Yeah, that kind of stuff is just... See, it's funny now that I can tolerate it. But at the beginning through YouTube, I would have to hit my head on the wall being like, are people this ridiculous? But in reality, they are this ridiculous.
Well, it's what people say when they're not in front of your face, right? When there's no repercussion.
They would never say that. And I would say that I've never in my life left a negative comment on anybody's page. Like, it's not in me. So I don't understand how people, you know, the comment I get most often is about my glasses. Like, oh, you're like, how do you wear those glasses, or your grandmother's glasses, or your daughter's glasses? I'm like, man, how does it bother you so much? Because I don't care what you're wearing. It makes no... If I walk down the street and see somebody wearing something I don't like, I don't care. Like, I don't even think about it. But online is a different world because people feel like they have the obligation to share. It's like they watch the whole video to find something wrong. And it happens like a lot. Like, you watched my whole 1 hour video only to find something wrong that you didn't like. I don't like your glasses. Why would you wear a Cardinals hat if you're in Philadelphia? You said you're 45. You look like you're 50. Is that really your daughter? Like, are you serious? Like, what kind of questions are these? Like, man, and they wouldn't say that in person. I get quite aggressive. Exactly. If that happened in person, it wouldn't happen. So yeah, it's just, you got to have some thick skin in the business of YouTube.
Yeah, no, that's it's fair enough. It, like you said, it's part of the business. And I think a lot of other YouTubers have come on and talked about, you know, especially your boy Seal, like we talked about that quite a bit. And sometimes you just have to, I think it's a good attitude to have, to laugh yeah. about it. You know what I mean?
I see recently he's posting up like some of the negative comments. I do it sometimes too. I think it's funny, but I don't know if it motivates people to leave stupider comments next time. So I don't know if it's beneficial in showcasing the stupid comments. Everybody wants to be the stupidest nowadays. We're weird.
They do, but if you like, for example, I think he takes the ones that are like the ones that the messages he gets from people, and then he posts the profile like, hey, this person said this.
Yeah.
I think they don't want to be associated with that, especially on Instagram. Maybe YouTube's a different culture, but I don't think people want to be seen.
I don't think they care. I really don't think they care. There's no thought put in. They leave a comment. They don't care.
Chris, let's get into the story.
Story time.
So I was in Haiti for a week about a year ago. And the reason I had gone, I'm sitting on my living room couch with my wife and we're watching the news, which we really don't watch too often. And the highlight or headline that came on was like Haiti is in a gang war, like crisis. The president was just killed. So I'm watching it with my wife and I look to my wife and she's like, let me guess, you want to go? And I'm like, yeah, love. Like this is, I wanted to go to Haiti. Let me go now. She's like, oh, be safe. So the next day I'm on a flight. I actually, I could only find one tour guide per se online. So when he picked me up at the airport, prior to that, I didn't tell him what my intentions were. So when he picked me up at the airport, his name is Sean, and he came with some itinerary, a paper with like, okay, we're going to go to the museum. We're going to go to this statue. And I looked at him like, Sean, I don't want to do any of that. I want to go into the gang territory. He looked at me. He's like, I've been waiting for a tourist like you. So his job is he's a fixer. You know, a fixer is for the media, like the CNN will say, hey, I want to interview with a gang leader. And he'll set it up. And then they go do the meeting. And he gets paid for fixing the situation. So when I came there, not CNN, by myself saying, I want to go into gang territory. He got excited. He threw away this little white paper itinerary. And right away, before we even brought my suitcase to the hotel, we went to gang territory. And went in. So on this specific occasion, we're in City of Soule, City of Sun, and it is known as Haiti's worst slum. And I think it's the poorest place on Earth, like planet Earth. The way it's situated is like, it's pretty big community, but every side of it is a different gang. And every gang is at war with each other. So the people of the city cannot leave. Okay, and as close as they are to the water, like the ocean, they cannot touch the water or they'll be shot at and killed. So they're living in this make-believe bubble. There's no physical bubble. They can't work. There's no vegetation. There's no good soil. It often, the water raises and their garden is very small. There's no food. There's no animals. There's nothing. There's no hope. There's no clean water. There's nothing. And if they try to leave, they'll be killed instantly because there's one street out and you'll have to pass by a gang checkpoint, which you see in my video. I have money or shoes to give to the checkpoint. They don't have it. They'll be killed. So I'm going in where everybody wants to come out. I'm the one going in to the territory. So the first thing we have to do is sit down with the leader, the gang leader of the one person that's in charge of this community today. We're sitting in this little tiny room, three of them and myself and my translator slash guide, Sean. And he's like, how much money are you going to offer us to enter like my area? And I brought I had 50 US dollars on me. I never leave my hotel with a lot of money because I know, I think it's like great. They're going to think I'm rich and I might, you know, become a target of kidnap or worse. Yeah. So I always have extra money in my pocket. My left sock is always my backup money. But in my pocket, I always have $50 to $100. So I said, look, I don't want to insult you, sir. I'm going to give you $50. Please let me enter. And I'd also like an escort, like not a girl escort, like an escort through the community, like somebody to bring me around. Sure, I'm okay. He's like, you're crazy. And he's telling through the translator and they're all laughing at me in there. And I'm like, oh, they're laughing. Is this a good laugh? So I start laughing too. And I'm telling my translator, tell him I'm crazy. And I start getting loud. So they think like there's something, I'm not normal. So he brings out his phone and he showed me a video. And the video is a man in a suit. And I remember vividly, and he's walking this man in a suit through the hills. And I'm presuming it's somewhere where I am, like somewhere in the neighborhood. And the guy is like turning back and they're talking. And then the guy turns around and goes like this, and he has a suit on. And then about, I don't know, 4 to 6 of them come with machetes and just start with his hand, cutting his hands off, his arms off, elbow, legs. And he's twitching and he's blood squirting everywhere. Everyone in the little room that I'm at is laughing. So I have to laugh immediately. And inside I'm crying. I'm like, what the hell? Inside is happening like at the same time. Like, what are you doing, Chris? So they turn and they ask me like, what do you think about this? So I question. I'm like, did he deserve to die? What did he do? And they're like, well, maybe he talked to the enemy. Maybe. Like, we don't know, but we think. I said, well, why did he wear a suit? Like, he's like, well, we told him we're going to kill him. Wear your best suit. And I'm like, why didn't he run? And they said, well, we told him if you run, we're going to kill your kid's teacher, the schoolmates, the neighbors, your mom, your father. So he was smart. He came and met us and he knew he was going to die. So I had to laugh and it's horrible, but to survive, I have to pretend to be somewhat like one of them. And I'm like, you guys are crazy. I'm like, I'm in the perfect spot because I'm crazy too. And they opened up the door and they let me through the community, which is the video I'm going to show tonight. And they had people around me to protect me in case other gangs came after me and all of that for $50 US. But it was that point. It's a pivotal point because if that guy was in a bad mood, he could have killed me in that little spot. Nobody would have known. He could have kidnapped me. for more money. But I was able to sort of talk my way out of it. And you know what? This story actually happens more. I can think of a few times that similar things have happened with guns and guns being held to me that you don't see in the videos. This is even since I started YouTube. And you're watching the video and you have no idea what I went through in order to get that video or to get to that place. So in today's video, there's a little part where I stop and explain that story just like I did now. So you understand, like, getting into these neighborhoods. I put that out there because I don't want people to go there. I don't want people to try to follow in my footsteps. If something happened, I would feel bad for it. But that being said, you know, I went there. Indigo Traveler saw the video and he messaged me and he's like, can I do the same thing? And I said, here's the information. Then Binsky took it from Indigo Traveler and did the same video. I was the first one in there to do it. Nobody had ever recorded it. Now, those guys are much bigger than me on YouTube and I respect their hustle. But I was the one that paved the way into that community. They just followed in my footsteps.
Fuck, man, you were telling that story. I got chills.
You know what was crazier? They actually gave me the video of them doing it. They're like, as a souvenir. And over time, it's only been a year. I just deleted it. It felt like I was being, my phone was like possessed with negativity. I don't get enjoyment out of watching that kind of stuff. I don't like it. I don't want it near me. It just shows how brazen, because I have videos in Haiti where they're like, Chris, you don't blur the faces of the gangsters. The gangsters don't care. This is not, it's a different world. Oh, you show where they're located. They know where the enemy is located. They're shooting at each other every day. So, you know, it's not like Pablo Escobar where the U.S. went to go find him. These are gangs that do not drive cars. They don't move. They were born. They know who their enemy is. They know where the enemy is located. They shoot. It's like Bloods and Crips. You know your blood, your Crip, your enemy. Like, nobody needed their blur. And I ask all the people, like, you want me to blur the face? They're like, no, don't be ridiculous. So that's one of the stories that comes to mind when it's like something that was like a touchy, could have gone either way.
Fuck, dude, that was heavy.
Yeah.
That's next level. That was recent, right? Was that like that new leader barbecue guy or whatever?
No. It was one of the oppositions to him. There are a lot of gangs there. I had the opportunity to talk to him. He wanted $5,000, which I was going to pay because it would be a good investment for me and my channel. But he wanted me to wait around 2 weeks. And I was really worried. You know, when I'm meeting gangsters, I never pre-plan it. I don't want them to think ahead of time, like, what they want to do. I don't want them conversing like, hey, what, you know, when I meet these gangsters, I just pull up on them. I've never talked to them before. I want to go in and out and I don't return. You know, sometimes they'll be like, hey, come back next week. I'm not coming back next week. I tell them yes, but I'm not coming back next week. So when Barbecue said over the phone, like, I'll do it for $5,000, but you have to wait 2 weeks. And I had already been there a week. I'm like, no, I'm pushing my luck. So,
dude,
so
I think I figured something out. Those guys that you're saying that you're coming back and you're not actually coming back, those are the guys who are putting the negative comments on your videos, dude.
They're calling everybody around the world and putting, I get the positive far outweighs the negative. I don't want to be a negative person, but some of these comments are just ridiculous. Today, I put up that I was in South Africa and they called a chicken, oh my God, a roadrunner. In the restaurant, they're like, oh, they call this roadrunner. Somebody commented, no, they don't. I'm from Africa. They don't call that roadrunner. And I'm like, it's on the menu in the restaurant I'm at, but you still know better. Like people are, there's something wrong. A lot of people have some issues up there. It's the know-it-all syndrome where people just need to be heard.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyways, man, Chris, this was great. Thank you so much for coming on. Before I leave you here, are you able to remind people where they can find you?
Sure. Chris Must List on YouTube. And I guess the same name on any social media you can find me. For like personal message, you want to send me a message, Instagram would be probably the best. But other than that, YouTube. And lastly, I'm starting a new channel as of yesterday called Chris Must Academy. You know, I've grown this channel of mine to 260,000 subscribers in the last 3 years. I'm hyper addictive to this whole YouTube thing. So when I'm not filming, I am studying every day, hour after hour, like reverse engineering success to try to figure out what works and what doesn't work, from thumbnails to titles to content. So I'm starting a new channel where I'm going to share tips on how to help grow your YouTube channel. So it's Chris Must Academy on YouTube.
Awesome.
And basically that is that.
Awesome, dude. Thank you so much for coming on. And I actually want to talk a bit more about that if we could just after this here. So thank you so much for coming on. We'll catch you next time, dude.
I appreciate that very much. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Two Beers Till Takeoff. Do you want free additional content or just to stay connected with the show? Then give us a follow on our social media platform. That means TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, all of them. Are you in need of podcast production services, video editing, or anything in between? Then look no further than Strut Sound Productions, the official producer of the Two Beers Till Takeoff podcast. Music produced by Alex Gagne. Check out his work in our show notes. Voiceover done by Viking Leo K. See you next week on Two Beers Till Takeoff.